Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Sports Weekend. Well, we've had a few issues yet again in studio. I've come into a chair. I feel like a dwarf as such, and so I've got no doubt my next guest will probably have a few comments to make on that. But it is a big day here in Auckland. A lot of sports going on. Big one at Eden Park, All Blacks versus Ireland, and of course down the road in Penrose, we have the Warriors versus the Dragons. Also had the Harlem Globetrotters, who's a basketball team I'll never make. But here to join us, as he always joins us, AJ Whitten. Good morning to you, mate.
Yeah, good morning to you, and big weekend ahead of us. Good to see you in the chair there. No doubt I've got that car seat there for you, mate. That'll help. So let's get into it.
Mate, I must admit, it's feeling a bit, it feels not good on the old back. And of course, I'll just let you know, I'm dressed in a, remember the old Aaron jumpers?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, sponsors, Colin from Father Ted's, he said, I had a few too many lemonades, and I said, I'll wear one on the day of the match, and guess what? He brought me one off Timu. It actually looks okay. It feels warm, but I'm just about to take that off because it's too hot. And so I'll just say this. It is. It looks quite splendid on me. Anyway, All Blacks versus Ireland. Few changes. Morby comes in. Tupia comes in. Tupu Vaia's moved to the blind side. And Big Paddy Tuipiloto is starting.
Yeah, I think obviously after the first two matches, a pretty entertaining match against the French, as it always is, got over the line. Too good for Italy, obviously shot themselves in the foot with that red card. And you've got to be smart rugby. I mean, really, a yellow card is penalised enough for 10 minutes, but 20 minutes with a red card, the match was all over. It turned into a bit of a scrappy affair, to be honest. All Blacks certainly weren't at their best. Congratulations, Will Jordan. Yeah, marvellous test try. So good to see that record gone. Now you move on and you've got this big test match at Eden Park. History on the line, unbeaten for 30-odd years, playing against a Irish side, which will have plenty of drive and commitment. I don't think it's quite as good as teams that have travelled here, especially in 2022, where they won the series. But playing against an all-black side that you said, Dave, when he's made some changes, put my ear in that centre position. I think he's like another loose forward at some stage. He's very good over that breakdown. The combination's still at 9 and 10s there. Mm. Vaia's come in. I think certainly they've come in to match the big boys against Ireland. He's very good in the line-out, and I think they've sacrificed maybe just a wee bit of pace to get out there and have a lot more physical commitment out there in that forward pack, because they're going to need it. And you've said Patrick's back. Hasn't played a lot of rugby, Biggie, so certainly he's going to be finding the pace pretty hot, and that front row is pretty established. So, yeah, a pretty much side I think we all would have picked. Morby certainly deserves his opportunity, but if they can get some consistent and quality ball to that back three, I just think we're pretty strong out wide. But it's a matter about that quality ball, Biggie. We certainly don't want it to be a scrappy affair. We certainly want to see this back line in flight.
Absolutely. But you've got to say one thing about this Irish side, especially the pack. It's very experienced, AJ.
You're the Irish idea. You don't write these guys off. We just like the way they approach game. Look, we know it's going to be a lot of short phases. They're very committed to that pick and go, one off, one out from the breakdown, from the scrub, breakdowns there with obviously Gibson Park, because Prendergast is back. That's a very good combination. Just like Love and Roygaard, you've got Gibson Park and Prendergast. You've got Ringrose back in the centre field. He'll bring that physicality in his tackle. Keenan's gone to the back at number 15. So they've made obviously a few 8 or 9 changes to their side. They're bringing the big guns. You've got Tag Furlong's coming to the tight head. A big boy McCartney in the middle row. I think Targ Murno numbers has gone to 6 and he's a lock. So
They've
sort of replicated a bit like the All Blacks, haven't they, Piggy? So they're going to match fire with fire. I've got a lot of time for this Van der Fly. I think he's a brilliant number 7, very tall, very athletic, and he'll prove a bit of a handful. So they're certainly going to have a crack. They're going to be a lot of physical contact. That's how they play it. They're quite happy to go 10, 12, 15 phases short of the line, and they'll just take opportunities if they get them out in the back line. So, it's going to be a real test. And let's just see that the All Blacks can just mitigate that physicality and wear them down that last 10-15 minutes.
Absolutely, AJ. And of course, then we have some other games in the rugby in the Nations Championship. This one, Japan versus France. I'm going to say this right now. Despite France losing the first game against the All Blacks, I think if there's any winner from the Northern Hemisphere, it's France. They've come out. They've brought in. Some new players. Galtian is. He's not scared. He's got a lot of depth there. So I think they'll be just too good for Japan. But France have really been impressive in this championship.
Well, I think you've summed it up pretty well. You know, when you can come over with that. Well, so-called B squad. I don't think that's fair. Very talented. They've got such depth. And this is, as you said, I think it's like just giving these guys international experience, just building up that pool, building up that base, looking out for that World Cup in 2027. So they're going to have a lot of pluses coming out of this tour, budding new players, getting used to that environment of test matches. So, yeah, but they've only made four changes, so that's a credit, obviously, to Japan. We've got to respect them on their home ground. I know Eddie Jones has made half a dozen changes to his side, giving Dern a rest, maybe indicating that Dern is playing there with the Hockings, the big tall fella. So look, Cornelison, obviously that's Greg Cornelison's boy in the boot. So there's a lot of talent there. Look, I think they're going to have to work hard. France, Japan have had a good little series, just losing to Ireland, and who had to work hard. So I think they've had a good campaign themselves, and their rugby's looking pretty good going forward. So definitely France to win, but I don't think it's going to be as big as what people expect.
And then we move on to Australia versus Italy, the last game in charge of the Wallabies for Joe Smith, I believe. Probably, obviously, the loss against France last week, it does expose a lot of things about Australian rugby, is the lack of depth within there. And Italy, well, we saw what they could do for 40-odd minutes against the All Blacks. And Minicello, he's probably one of the best second fives in the world.
Oh, yeah, certainly got some talent, all right. Once again, you know, they shoot themselves in the foot a bit at times, the older Italians, that they get that emotional brain explosion at times and things go a bit left or right. But when they get it together, they're a decent side. And don't forget, they had a very good Six Nations. They haven't quite put it together on this tour. They've had a few ups and downs. So whether they can rectify it here, I don't think so. You mentioned Joe Schmidt, it is his last match as head coach of the Australian side. You look at analytically, it hasn't been a great tenure. We know Joe's a very good coach. You mentioned maybe the lack of cattle, but he hasn't got a great record in that win column. And really, in the end, it's about winning, and it hasn't really manifested once again with a coach leading the Australian side. So I think it'll be a good send-off. They'll all have a point to prove. They want to go out on this Nations bit with a win and send Joe on his way. A few changes in the Aussie side, but I think they've all got to step up, Peggy. I just don't think they're consistent enough, and really, World Cup next year in Australia, a lot of pressure on them to pick things up before that happens.
And of course, then we move on, Fiji versus Scotland. Scotland were impressive against South Africa last week.
Yeah, that shows you how nuggety they are, and those South Africans had to work really hard. But then there's another team that's on the way back. I think they obviously they were pretty good in the Six Nations as well, got a bit of belief. Playing Fiji, of course, in Edinburgh, so because it's a away game for Fiji, but they play it, a home game, sorry, but they play it at home in Scotland. So, Scotland all over Fiji, I think, just to start their campaign at home.
And of course, then we go. South Africa versus Wales. Now, I think this is probably the easiest game we could pick out of any of them. And I would say this right now. I do feel a bit sorry for Wales, but, you know, Rassie's made changes again. He's got that depth. I think it's going to be one-way traffic, and I hope it isn't a slaughtering.
Well, you're playing them in Durban. Great ground, by the way, Kings Park. Very entertaining, very close. But you see, he's made a lot of changes and he couldn't afford to. Look, can't take it. You've still got to go do the basics. We know that they should be far too strong for Wales, but they've certainly got to put their heads down and come out with some credibility. Not going back home and thinking, took another 50 points on us. Just bad news on bad news. So, look, I wish him all the best. It's going to be so confrontational for him, you know, having Marks in the front row again. Steen Komp, I mean, these are big, tough men. Van der Heerden in the middle row. So they're going to have their hands full, Peggy, but let's hope they come away with some resemblance of credibility and giving it a go.
Absolutely. And then the final one, whoa, Argentina versus England. Now, there was another Argentina-England match in a different sporting code, which was a bit controversial. And I think this will have a lot of spice to it, AJ. England, they were happy with their win against Fiji last week, but Argentina got back on the horse. They beat Wales. They were disappointed with their loss against Scotland. I think this match could be the match of the round.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, England had that big 70-point win over Fiji, and I see that Steve Hawke hasn't made any changes, so he's sticking to that squad, that 15, which is good, reward. But Contepone, the coach of Argentina, he's no mug, pretty steady side. Playing at home there, you can imagine the crowd, they'll be going crazy. Tremendous support over there for their Los Pumas. So, yeah, I think this will be close. I'm going to stick with England. I think it's important that they show that they're on their way back after really poor Six Nations. They've got to put some pride back in that jersey, and they've got to do it on the road. They take every team on and build up that credibility that they are in the top three or four. So they've certainly lost their way a wee bit in that championship. So I think it's a starting base for England where they can start putting a role on internationally. So important game for them. I'm going to pick them, beating the Pumas, but it's not going to be pretty, put it that way.
Absolutely. Well, I'm also going to... On Monday, it'll be the 6th anniversary since I've been on air, AJ. And you were not the first guy, but I ended up getting hold of you, and you've been a huge part of the show, AJ. We've basically taken the mickey out of each other, whether it's been about my lack of height and obviously being the top weight and your lack of hair and possibly intelligence as well too. But I have to say, we also spoke a bit of rugby as well too, and we had a lot of fun.
Well, it is. Congratulations, mate. Look, 6 years, it's a pretty tough gig out there, and just credit to you. I know we take the proverbial here and there, but we're a bit like Albert and Costello.
Yeah, we certainly are, except for...
Pleasure, and well done to you, mate. Say, enjoy the weekend, enjoy the test, because it should be a beauty. I'm going to be roughing it in another box.
Poor guy.
So I'll be thinking of you, just looking forward to a real classic test encounter from two really historical sides, and I just hope that the crowd walk away saying, well, yeah, that was worth the money to attend.
Now, Piggy Hallis and AJ Whetton, somebody AI'd it, and they said a comedy duo that talks about rugby.
Yeah, well, people say that we're both a bit of a joke at times, but anyway.
Well, I have to say, by the way, Mr. Mackay sends his regards. He actually complimented me on making you a better broadcaster.
Well, that's good for Hamish. It's always nice to hear that from someone from Palmerston North, and we know that they don't get out of there very often.
They've only just got colour TV just installed in the last couple of weeks. When you say watch it on Sky, they go out and they look at it and look outside their farms. But no, in all honesty, AJ, had a lot of fun doing this. I've had a heap of fun doing this. for the past, you know, we've been doing this for close to five years now, and I was just working out how many shows since we've gone to Saturday. I think we've done well over 150 shows. And you know, I'll say this. Listen, I'm not as good as those Flash Harrys like your mate part-time Kyle and some of the blokes over at the bigger studios, but you know, I think I'm actually going to give myself a pat on the back, mate, and the reason is because I think I've produced a bloody good sports show.
Good on you, boy. You just do that. You shut yourself a beer tonight and just sit back and relax.
And with all my friends.
Well, I said that single chair may take two or three extras, but to think of it.
Yeah, well, I think I feel sorry for this chair at the moment. As you can, it's possibly would have to have structural steel in the moment because of me. But, AJ, you have been brilliant, mate. You have a good time. I know you're roughing it in a corporate box. Again, you poor guy. So we'll leave it at that. Have a great weekend, okay, AJ.
Mate.
Yeah,
mate. Look after yourself.
Yeah, we'll see you again and we'll chat next week. Cheers, mate. Bye. Yeah, I forgot all about it. It's the 6th anniversary show, and I have to say AJ has been a huge part of the show along with a lot of people that have been part of this. So, you know, Bernie McCahill, Hamish McKay, Pat McKendry, Laurie Mayne. So we've had them all. Anyway, we've got a big, big match happening at Eden Park, the big sporting weekend in Auckland. And I have to say it's been an interesting time especially leading up to this match between the All Blacks and Ireland. Now, this morning I got up at 6:30 and I had to call up my old mate, Alan Quinlan, former Irish international, to speak about this upcoming international. So I'll just get to this right now.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Sports Weekender. And this is a pre-record, so I am up so early in the morning. But I say good evening in Ireland to former Irish international Alan Quinlan. How are you, Alan?
I'm very good, Eamon. And you?
Yeah, I would say a bit dusty and a bit tired after. As you know, I was just telling you we had a bit of a pre-test luncheon. International luncheon, so ended up going quite well. I spoke to a couple of old teammates of yours, Isaac Boss and Rua Tupoki, and I have to say, really, they actually said to say hi. Sorry, Alan, I forgot to take the photo, but no, it was a fantastic day. And of course, as we count down to what the excitement is in the city with the All Blacks playing Ireland.
Yeah, well, they're always the best days, aren't they, in those luncheons? Yeah.
Yeah, well, I tend to... Well, you wouldn't believe it. I've had to... since I've had to get up early and do the Saturday gig, I've decided to cut back a bit. So it's a bit different, but it's always good fun. But the Irish team was announced on Thursday morning, New Zealand time, and I would have been... Wednesday would have been Thursday morning, your time, early morning. But what's your thoughts on Andy Farrell's side that he has selected for this important game?
Yeah, there's no surprise for me, Eamon, as regards there's a lot of experience comes back into the team. He mixed it up last week, Andy Farrell against Japan, which, you know, was the right thing to do. It wasn't a sweet and sublime kind of performance, but they got the results, and this week obviously they've gone back for the tried and trusted, and I think a big boost for Ireland's Robert Ballacoon coming into the right wing. He has so much pace and had a really good Six Nations, and Tadhg Byrne, who, you know, got injured towards the end of the season with Munster, hadn't a lot of rugby pay before last weekend. Before the start of this Nations Championship, he started at blindside, and it's 4 years on since Ireland won the series, and you know, the last time Ireland played there, different teams, but there's a few familiar faces in the Irish team and a lot of new faces in the All Blacks team. So it's a strong Irish team, I think. You'd love to have a little bit more youthful enthusiasm there, but it's a good Irish team, and they finished the Six Nations really well. They won, you know, they were only a couple of seconds away from winning the championship after a disappointing start against France. So, yeah, I think if you look at this team that played Australia 2 weeks ago, they had some very good moments and they relied on big moments in the game, but consistency throughout that performance against Australia won't be good enough tomorrow or tonight for you guys against New Zealand. So, look, I like the makeup of the team. I think Ireland are down a good few props. At Loosehead and Tom O'Toole is kind of deputising there for this tour. He's converted from tight head. Most of his rugby's been played at tight head. So he's going to be up against it against Tyrrell Lomax. And I think just the key for Ireland is trying to get set piece parity and defend well, because there's a lot of X factor dangerous players in the All Blacks team.
And one thing I have to say about the team pack, the pack is experience. Your pack is experience. They've been there a while, with the exception of O'Toole. But to me, they still despite some of the injury, they're still a menacing. The Irish still have a menacing pack. Big question for me would be over Sam Prendergast. Now, I was at a luncheon yesterday, and the talk was, when I spoke to a few people, that there were, and any Irish fan that's been over there, their biggest concern is Prendergast. And obviously with Jack Cowley injured, many felt Frawley possibly should have been given more time during this Nations Championship. But I have to say, for Sam Prendergast, he really needs that big match against the All Blacks, not only for Ireland but for his own confidence.
Yeah, look, I think he needs to play well and do his job well. I don't think it's solely down to Sam Prendergast how the result goes. I think the thing for him, the indifference for him in the last kind of 6 to 12 months has been, he's been kind of highlighted a little bit in missing tackles, and from a defensive point of view, he's been exposed. He had a very strong end to the season with Leinster. He was outstanding in the URC final against the Bulls.
Yeah.
So look, that would have done his confidence to the world of good. There's no doubt, and I'm sure people in New Zealand may not be that familiar with Sam Prendergast. He's a very, very talented footballer.
Yeah.
Lovely hands, good kicker of the ball, I think. But, you know, and throughout my time playing, I think if you have a 10 in any team, that's there's a bit of frailty in defence, you're always going to go after it, and there's been a lot of focus on that. I actually think just it's a lot of it is technique. He's very tall, 10, he exposes his chest a little bit, and I'm sure it's something he's been working on, and he's a good temperament and a good attitude, and you look, I'm sure the All Blacks will try and get after him and put pressure on him, but hopefully from an Irish point of view he can have a good game, and I hope, you know, if the All Blacks win, which I expect, that we're not talking about a Sam Prendergast mistakes or Sam Prendergast issues. I just hope that it's not focused on him, because I really believe that he's a talented player and has a big future. He's still very, very young.
I will say this, it's the role which Prendergast is in, and anyone after what Johnny Sexton done for Irish rugby is always going to be hard for the next cab off the rank coming in. Also, the selection of Sean Jansen from Connacht, and of course his New Zealand connection. Obviously, he went raised in Dunedin and then spent time playing in our Heartland Championship for North Otago. And I know that we all know the North Otago CEO very well as a former Irish women's international. She'll be claiming that, but I have to say his story's been amazing.
Yeah, it has, and you know, I had a couple of years in Leicester before he came to Connacht. I think this year in particular, he seems to have really matured and worked on his game. Stuart Lancaster obviously has a part to do with that. His coaching in Connacht, and he scored a lot of tries, and he's had a superb second half of the season, as is his team Connacht have. You know, they weren't going so well before pre-Christmas, and you know, Sean Jansen scored a lot of tries, very powerful ball carrier, explosive, and I think he's ready. I think he's someone that I would have picked out and said, yeah, this guy is shown that he's ready and capable of playing at international level. So it's a great story, and it's a you know, he has Irish heritage, obviously, through his parents, but he is, you know, born and raised in New Zealand. So it's a little bit like the, you know, maybe Gibson Park, James Lowe, Bundy Aki story, that of the way they came from New Zealand, played with Ireland. Obviously, they didn't have the same heritage. They qualified through the, you know, the residency rule. But for Jansen, I think it's a great opportunity, and he deserves a shot, and I hope he goes well. He's really explosive, and he's an aggressive ball carrier.
Absolutely. And, of course, you know, you've been watching this from Ireland, this Nations Championship. What's been the opinion of it across in the Northern Hemisphere about this Nations Championship? Because I think the rugby has been absolutely superb.
Yeah, I think the powers that be were pretty pleased with the quality and the excitement of all the games. I think you go to that first weekend and, you know, you had New Zealand-France, which was an exceptional game of high quality, the high-scoring game, lots of tries. You know, Japan beating Italy. People, you know, didn't expect to see that one. They were superb in beating Italy, who did very well in the Six Nations. And then, you know, the Ireland-Australia game, great excitement, some mistakes and errors in that game. And, you know, typically the Springboks were, you know, a dominant force when they played England in the afternoon, and Scotland's winning Argentina. So day one, it was just an exceptional day of rugby. Great scores, and obviously if your team for whatever country, you wouldn't be too pleased with it, but it was superb. So yeah, look, I think it's been great. It's been fantastic. I think there's a lot of talk, Eamon, about the length of the season here in the Northern Hemisphere. We'll be going on this late into July, but traditionally the summer tours would have probably been a couple of weeks earlier, but no, I think it's been fantastic and people have really enjoyed it. And obviously when the Northern Hemisphere come up to this neck of the woods in November, it's going to be you know, bring great excitement again, and it'll culminate with a finals weekend in London. So yeah, it's different, it's a different concept, and there was some kind of question marks about how it would go, but I think the first two weekends we've seen some outstanding rugby.
I must admit I was very sceptical, but after that All Blacks France game, I must admit it was just fantastic. And when we speak about the Northern Hemisphere teams, obviously it's a chance for development. What we've seen not only out of Ireland, they're developing some players coming through, as we saw against Japan, but France in particular. They look, I know that in the Southern Hemisphere we speak about South Africa being the scary prospect that it is, but France look to me like an extremely scary prospect for the World Cup next year.
Yeah, for sure. Look, France, South Africa, New Zealand are the top three, and they're probably a level ahead of everybody else. I think, look, on the rest of the nations who are kind of in that group behind on their day, they can produce results and get results against them. But yeah, the depth that France have is just exceptional, and I think Fabien Galthié has, and the French Rugby Union have, you know, they've settled on a structure there that there's obviously more control from the French Union, and the players are rested more, and it's starting to benefit and show. And, you know, when you've two top divisions like they have, there's so much quality in Pro D2 as well. So he's a lot of players to choose from, Fabien Galthié, and it's a nice luxury to have. But the brand of rugby they're playing, and you know, even watching Toulouse winning the top 14 this year in France, again the dominance from them, Bordeaux winning the European Cup, so many of the Toulouse and Bordeaux players in there, so they're top quality. And obviously we don't see Dupont in this one, he's injured, but France absolutely will be a real prospect, and they're at that level now, and I think they're recognised as a team that it's very, very difficult to beat, and they've so much power and flair as well. So they're definitely going to be a force for the World Cup in 2027, and they're playing brilliant rugby at the moment.
Absolutely, Alan. Well, Alan, thank you so much for making yourself available to myself, and I really always enjoy our chats, and hopefully we can chat a bit in a bit in November as we look forward to the Northern Hemisphere League of the Nations Championship.
Okay, it's my pleasure, Eamon. Don't go too hard on us anyway in Eden Park.
Good man.
I'm not expecting an Irish win, but I'm hoping for a good performance from Ireland, hopefully. Anyway, cheers, Eamon.
Absolutely. Cheers, bye.
And that was former Irish international Alan Quinlan. Now, before I go any further, I've just had to remind myself I've got to do a couple of ads for the sponsors. So, big match today in Auckland, All Blacks versus Ireland. Do you know where you should be heading to? Father Ted's Original Irish Pub. They're based at 1 Wellesley Street, west in the Auckland CBD. They have a selection of local craft and international draft beers on tap, a selection of bottle beers, fine wines, good spirits, great food and music Wednesday through to Sunday. So make Father Ted's your location to go to. Their number is 09-377-3142, or you can email them fatherteds@hotmail.com. And if you're down there, or you might see me in my beautiful Aaron jumper, say g'day. Also, This is a big shout out to Force Electrical. Now, the story of Force Electrical, it has been around for over 20 years in the Auckland market. And I can honestly say it has been one of the leaders. So basically what they do is that they can do anything. They're a well-known name in the electrical industry in Auckland. They can do anything from residential, commercial, any electrical maintenance you need. And I can tell you something, one thing they also do is they're reliable and they stay ahead of all the electrical standards. So if you want to give your business for any electrical work, residential, commercial, this is the people you need to call. It is call Nick at Force Electrical, 0216283841, or you can email nick@forceelectrical.co.nz. Apologies there, stumbling through the show. Anyway, next up we're going to talk a bit of rugby league, and we're going to be speaking with my old mate Joey Green. Welcome everyone back to the Sports Weekender here on Planet FM, and I hope you're enjoying the show so far. So basically, this we speak some NRL and Auckland Rugby League, and this is brought to you by WaterSmart. Weekend mission sorted, mate. Wash the car, rinse the boat, clean the bait station, keep the wife's tomato plants happy, all with a water smart tank. No water restrictions, no worries, and different sizes to suit your property. So check out watersmart.co.nz and take control today. Well, thank you very much. Well, yes, it is the 6th anniversary show. Well, it will be on Monday. I will say this right now. Rugby League's been a huge part of the show from day one, from the likes of Frank Endicott to Bluey McLenahan to, and then I got hold of Auckland Rugby League and a guy called TJ Ashford, who's probably hitting to, and then he couldn't do it. Then they said, we've got this young fellow, he's enthusiastic, he knows his rugby league, knows his NRL, knows his local rugby league, and I think he's, for the past 2 years, he's been a real good part of the show. Good morning to Joey Green. How are you, mate?
Yeah, good morning, mate. You're too kind. But feeling refreshed after a quick little trip away to Brisbane. Managed to watch some NRL footy over there, some local footy while I was there. But, back and ready to rip into another week and happy anniversary for the show.
Yeah, well, we've got there in the end. I think the biggest thing is that we haven't just been NRL. We've covered local stuff in which, I think the appreciation will one day come. But, hey, it's all cool with me. Okay, we're going to kick it off. Warriors versus the Dragons. Now, anyone getting around Auckland on public transport or driving anyway, good luck. We've got two big matches within 4Ks of each other, all at the same time, but the Warriors pretty much to full strength here, Joey. What I see from them is that they're full strength. They've even had to leave Chance Nicholl-Kotsep out of the squad. That's how much depth they've got at the moment. Dragons, they've improved. You look at their record, it doesn't reflect how much improvement has been made.
No, 100%. I think when you look at the Warriors side over the last couple of weeks, obviously, last weekend with how the Origin period has been, Kurt Capel and Mitch Barnett kind of coming in and out of the side over a number of weeks. But now that they're back, heading into the back end of the season, now we start to see the likes of Eddie Aramia drop out of the side. I thought he was tremendous last week against the Tigers. He's very unfortunate to be missing out on a spot in the 17. But if injuries go his way, we might see him in action tonight. Chance Nicholl-Klukstar kind of coming in and out of the squad. I think it shows the trust that Webby's got in the likes of Adam Pompey and Ali Laiatawa. Now, they've been kind of the two players who have been under a lot of pressure from many pundits. Probably over the same Origin period as well. And whilst the Warriors are still, kind of getting results, they aren't getting some. They're losing the games, which I think they should against Penrith and the Dolphins, who are two very good sides. Respectfully, they're still doing a pretty handy job. I think a lot of the pressure is going to come in September when, the games are really starting to matter and it's knockout football. They're going to be doing a job at the moment. Whether we see Chance Nicholl-Klukstar maybe coming to one of the centre spots, if it's going to be for anyone, it's probably going to be for Ali Laiatawa, who, like a lot of the other young fellows, has really done a good job over the last month. Jacob Laban's been another one who I've been really impressed with since that Jackson Ford injury. A lot of these younger guys are starting to stand up. Jacob Laban, Tanner Stowers-Smith, and they're going to be certainties to hold their spot for the future. The Dragons, on the other hand, are just desperate for anything. We saw them get a win over the Tigers a couple of weeks ago. They're going to be wanting to come over here and ambush the Warriors as well. So, if you're a punter and you're looking at anything on the TAB, which I hope you do responsibly, you'd want to chuck some money on the Dragons 13 plus. But if it's anything like the rest of the season, it should be a Warriors pretty comfortable win.
Absolutely. Well, we look back at the Thursday and Friday games. Wow, this one I didn't see coming. You know what? The NRL table, it looks like the Southern Motorway at about 5 p.m. at night on a Tuesday night. It's that congested. But Panthers 12, Broncos 14, Payne Haas and Pat Carrigan, really it was a game for forwards. But the star was, and it was Reece Walsh.
Oh, exactly. I think it was just a Reece Walsh show that whole night. Look, I think if you're a Panthers fan, you're going to be pretty disappointed with that one. At home, yes, they're playing at Combank, which isn't their traditional home, but regardless of that, with the Panthers side we've seen over the last 6 years, that's well below their standard. Regardless of whether it's wet, sunny, they should be able to ice games like that. And the key guys kind of went missing in that one, and Nathan Cleary and Isaiah Yeo. For Tom Jenkins and Brown Saul, the outside backs in a losing effort were pretty outstanding. But, the four guys from the Broncos who stood up, Xavier Willison and Payne Haas up front, Pat Carrigan following alongside them, and Reece Walsh. You're kind of be a bit disappointed if you're Adam Reynolds and Ezra Mam. You're probably going to need to get Walsh a little bit more ball you know, if you want to be able to put more points on the boards. But regardless, you know, Madge and his men, could we see them making a late run for the eight?
Well, there's only one team that could do it, and that is the Broncos. Okay, Friday's game, Sharks 20, Knights 18. The Hines, Tindall, halves combination have been brilliant. One of the most underestimated players in the NRL is Will Kennedy. But on the Knights side, Kalyn Ponga made a few mistakes, but I'm really excited to see him in that Kiwis jumper at the end of the year.
I think the Sharks, as a whole, are probably one of the most underrated sides who no one's really talked about over the last 6 weeks. So, you know, over the last eight rounds, if they haven't won all of them, they've at least won six or seven. So they're going to be a side to watch coming in towards the back end of the competition. I thought the Knights, in a losing effort, left a lot of opportunities on the board, which Justin Holbrook won't be too happy about. But they're still in the better half of the ladder. But, you know, games like that, they haven't won in Cronulla since 2014. And last night kind of showed Hines and Trindle are massive. Will Kennedy, like you said, Ronaldo Molitalo over the left-hand edge with Kale Edel. They're going to be a dangerous team to watch over the last couple of months.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Then the Roosters 14, Storm 6. Good hard-fought win for the Roosters. Obviously, Will Woolbrook, he's out for the season, and Stacey Jones will be a bit concerned, but he will also be encouraged. Nathaniel White was outstanding.
Yeah, you're going to be very disappointed if you're a Kiwis fan, a Kiwis coach, Kiwis selector, seeing Will Woolbrook going down as easily as he did. Sounds like it's an Achilles injury, and even if you're a Warriors fan too, you're probably going to be disappointed that you won't see him until the 2027 season. But a very tough fought win for the Roosters, like you said, their middle forwards really stood up last night, and Fahu White, Victor Radley, Lindsay Collins, your usual troopers for the Roosters who usually do a very good job. Sam Walker and Daly Terry-Evans, combination is really starting to come along nicely. And similar to Cronulla, they've kind of gone under the radar a little bit, and it's probably because of some of these teams like the Panthers and the Dolphins who have stolen a lot of the limelight. But similar thinking, you know, coming into September, you know, whether the Storm, once they add Jerome Hughes and Cameron Munster back into the side, whether they're going to be able to compete remains to be seen. But the Roosters, another team that's flying under the radar and could be a danger threat to this top four.
Absolutely. So we go to the weekend's game in the NRL. Raiders versus Rabbitohs. Bulldogs versus Tigers. First one, Raiders versus Rabbitohs. I just think the Raiders have still got a chance, but it's very slim. But the Rabbitohs, they are just playing some good football.
Yeah, well, I think when you look at last week's results as well, it kind of showed the glimpses of potential that both these sides have. Like, the Raiders, I think, have finally found their best 17, and it's kind of a bit of a pity that it's taken them nearly 20 rounds to find that best 17. I think, you know, someone like Dane Laurie's gone very well for them. He's played a number of positions. He's played in the centres. He's played 5/8. He's played lock at some occasions. He's just a natural footballer, and I think that's what this Raiders side is built on, is just guys who, regardless of where they get put, they do a job and they do it well. The Rabbitohs, similar thinking. You know, they've got guys in there like Latrell Sewell, who's another natural footballer, Talis Duncan, Jack Whiten, Cody Walker. So I think if it's going to be anything like last night's games, where it's very wet weather, we might see a lot of errors. I think that game kind of suits the Canberra Raiders, who have a very tough ball pack with Joe Tarpany, Corey Horsbrough, Josh Papali'i. Could see, if it's, you know, like last night, if it's going to be a bit wet, we might see a Canberra 2 points.
Absolutely. Then, of course, then we've got, what else? Oh, we've got the Bulldogs versus the Tigers. Now, I think this is an easy one to pick. I think the Bulldogs all day. The Tigers are in big, big trouble.
Yeah, I think the Tigers are in big trouble with the whole Jerome Luai debacle. I'm read into that what you want. But the Bulldogs are kind of in their own little predicament too. You know, Stephen Crichton, him and Matt Burton kind of juggling positions. Sean O'Sullivan coming into the side this afternoon. I think the Bulldogs are going to win big this afternoon purely based off that. He's a traditional half alongside Lachlan Galvin. Will kind of free him up to play a bit more of his natural game. So I think the Bulldogs are going to be in for a big one tonight.
And then we move on to the Titans versus the Seagulls. Now, I'm picking the Titans in this one. I know we spoke about Fosball, but I just think the Titans at home, Kano Kinney, that sparks a bit of magic, and I think that the Titans could win this one.
Yeah, you look at the that Titans spine as a whole have improved a heck of a lot over the last 8 rounds. You know, Ollie Pascoe at number 9 has started to develop really nicely. Jaden Campbell and Dane Harrison's a really good combination for them. Keanu Kinney, don't forget, you've still got AJ Brimson on the side too, albeit out in the centre. So they've got a lot of X-factor in the side. And Manly are a pretty similar team to Gold Coast at the moment, to be fair. They like to tuck the ball around under Kieran Foran. So it's going to be a really interesting matchup. Gold Coast love playing at home on a Sunday afternoon, so I think they're going to be in for a big afternoon. They might sneak the 2 points and then go for a cheeky couple of waters at the Burley Cav.
Absolutely. And then this one is a big one. Dolphins versus Cowboys. I said it while you were away enjoying yourself on holiday. You know, some of us have to, you know, keep the lights going, Joey. I was talking to Stephen McIver, and I just said the Dolphins remind me so much of the Warriors in 2002. You may not have been around then, but I could actually tell you they're a fantastic football side. And the Cowboys, they're tough, but I think the Dolphins, they're just on fire at the moment.
Well, yeah, the Dolphins and Cowboys, this is going to be a really interesting matchup, especially after last weekend's games. I don't think anyone would have seen the drubbing coming that the Dolphins got. And the Cowboys, similar to the likes of the Bulldogs, the Titans, the Tigers, they've got points in them. They've just got to be able to do it consistently. And I would hope that with how poorly the Dolphins performed last week, I think they're going to be up for this one and get the job done. But you just never quite know with North Queensland. So this one's going to be, I feel like it's going to be a high scoring one. But the Dolphins are going to come away with it.
Absolutely. So then we go to the Fox Memorial Premiership, and it's Bay Roskill versus Marist Saints, Ponsonby versus Mount Albert, Manukau versus Otahuhu, and Point Chev versus Papakura. The only side out of playoff contention is Marist Saints, but all, and obviously Otahuhu, are the runaway leaders at the moment. But we got some crucial game. Bay Roskill versus Marist Saints. You'd have to favour Bay Roskill. I know that they're still fighting to get into that top four.
Yeah, 100%. There's all to play for in the last couple of rounds of this Fox Memorial competition. Like you said, Marist are already destined to be heading into the Sharman Cup for 2027. So they'll just be wanting to try and disrupt a couple of seasons. And it starts this afternoon at Blockhouse Bay. And I think the Vikings, with everything to play for, are just going to be too strong and will play their expensive football and get the job done.
Ponsonby versus Mount Albert. Ponsonby, they've really been one of the real surprises in this competition.
Yeah, 100%. You look at the likes of the Dylan Savitas. Congrats to Timor Williams, who plays his 100th game for Ponsonby this afternoon. A pretty incredible feat. To do it, and he's younger than me and still only 24 years of age too, so to be playing 100 games for a club at so young is a testament to his loyalty to the club. So I think with an occasion like that, yes, Mount Albert have a lot to play for this afternoon, but I think Ponsonby, with the season they've been having, I think they're going to be too strong.
Absolutely. Manukau versus Otahuhu in a bit of a South Auckland derby. I think Otahuhu, they've just been the best side. And to me, I will eat my hat if they don't win the Fox this year.
Yeah, look, they've already sewn up the minor premiership 2 weeks ago. You know, so they really don't have a whole lot to play for. Whereas you look at Manukau, they'll want to be holding on to that second spot to be able to have a home semi leading into the playoffs in a couple of weeks' time. Playing Otahuhu at home, they've been a very hard side to stop at home. Have the Magpies, so I think they're going to try and upset the Leopards at home and put a loss on their column, but I don't think we're going to see it this afternoon.
And Point Chev versus Papakura.
Yeah, look, both sides will be wanting to try and push into finals football, and I think Poinsett at home are just going to be too strong for a Papakura side who, like everyone else, are trying to play for a final spot. But very interesting matchups over the next couple of weeks.
Absolutely. Then we go quickly to the Steel Shanks Women's Premiership. Richmond versus Mangere East. Manurewa versus Otahuhu. Manawa versus Manuka. If you can just wrap that up quickly for us.
Yeah, look, Richmond are starting to find some nice form over the last few weeks, and I think they'll be too strong for Mangere East. Manurewa versus Otahuhu, probably the game of the round in the Steel Shanks Premiership. But Otahuhu, similar to their Fox Memorial side, are kind of running away with this competition, and I'm expecting that'll be a similar tale this afternoon. And then Manuka taking on Mount Albert. That's going to be an interesting clash. Both these sides have kind of won each against each other. And I think, you know, Mount Albert might walk away with the chocolates in this one this afternoon.
Okay, Joey, thanks so much for your time today. We will catch up next week. I better keep moving. I've got another, because the show just keeps on going on, man.
Always a pleasure to be on, mate. Happy anniversary, and we'll chat again next week.
Yeah, absolutely. Cheers. That was Joey Green from Auckland Rugby League. As it's the 6th anniversary show, we're going to have a mid-morning panel, and next up is Andy Thompson and Lee Piper.
That's the bottom line. Yeah, I have a lot of fun, don't you? And living with you is a ball of a time. Hey, beauty, when the mood gets you down, you bottomless fear dragging on the ground. That's when I gotta play the clown for you. Black humor made you kick your boots. How it ain't good.
Welcome everyone back to the Sports Weekend. Just before we go to our next wonderful guest, and I say that with a bit of sarcasm. Anyway, finding the right people can be hard, and there's so many unexpected surprises. So cut out those unexpected surprises by contacting Enterprise Recruitment. They will find you the right candidate to suit your business needs. So contact enterprise.co.nz and find the right person. Anyway, we have our panel, and, you know, I've got to say this, and I've actually, this irks me to say this, this first guest, he's been very, very good to me. He's got me a lot of contacts, and I have to say he's not a bad bloke, even though he gives me heaps. The Mouth of the South, Lee Piper, how are you?
Hey, I'm good, eh? How are you? I'm well, thank you.
Yeah, 6th anniversary show, you know.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, that's great stuff. Great to hear the great team at Enterprise on. Top stuff for recruitment. So if you're looking in the market, bring those guys. They've sorted me out with a few over the years.
Yeah, I know.
Apart from Thompson, they've been pretty successful.
Yeah. And, of course, West rugged West Coast farmer, and I say that with huge sarcasm, Andy Thompson, how are you, mate?
I'm very good, Amon. I'm fantastic, mate. Great to be here. Thank you. And lovely to be online with one of the legends of New Zealand radio and broadcasting.
Hang on. Telfer, you're not on with Telfer.
Well, I think you're a bit generous to call him a rugged West Coast farmer. That's
yeah, well, you know, as I just said, I speak to all the farming people. As we all know the people that have farming shows, but I have to say Andy does know his stuff when it comes to farming. I've got to say that. And I listen to the Countrywide Connect. It's a bloody good listen. Anyway, let's...
You'll be able to watch Countrywide Connect soon as well. You know that on Sky, Channel 83, on Face TV from Monday. Just thought I'd get that plug in quickly.
Are you going to charge us for it?
No, it's free to air.
That's marvellous.
That's even better.
Do they have that other country thing that you have to pay for?
Yeah, they've still got that. Country TV. No, we're on 83. Face TV. Yeah.
Oh, great work from you. You're a multi-channel broadcaster.
He is. He's a talented man, and as I just said, I know that, you know, this is what I reckon, Andy, you know, because your show's going so well, I reckon you need to have a sports segment with myself and Piper.
Well, I reached the bottom of the barrel yesterday in our sports segment, and we had Miles Davis on.
Yes, I hear that.
he wasn't overly happy when I asked him whether he'd be looking forward to the third and fourth playoff at that point. He got very upset, and then I said, you'll probably do a lap of honour at the end of it, and he nearly choked on his Weet-Bix.
I try to get Miles on, but he's very, very busy this weekend.
He's still in mourning.
Yeah, I think he is. He's probably
very, very bitter.
Yeah. Well, I have to say, well, you'll be scaring the bottom of the barrel if you get myself and Piper on. Anyway, we started off with you, Lee. Big test match in Auckland. All Blacks versus Ireland. Mate, I think this game is going to be a close one. Your thoughts, Pipes?
I think we've seen this over the last few years, that there's not much between the sort of the top five, top six, probably South Africa aside, who seem to be just slightly ahead of everybody, and we're really going to find that out, aren't we, in a month or so, about really how good they are. But look, it's an Irish side. I think the problem with Ireland is at 10. I just think they haven't really been able to replace Sexton, and I think, and I've said this a lot in Super Rugby, if you don't have a 10, you really struggle. And I think if you have a look at the rugby for next year, I think you'll see a better performance from the Highlanders simply because Josh Jacobs at 10. I think the Blues struggle at 10, and that's where a lot of their problems were. And I think it's the same with Ireland. So it's an interesting selection. You know, they're continuing with the Ardie at 8, which for me, I don't know whether he's been saving himself, but we haven't seen him come off the back. We've really seen him roam out into the tram a bit on the outside. He's made a little bit of play there, but he's been pretty quiet. But I actually predicted this last week and it didn't come off. He's run with it this week, which is Tupu Vaa at 6. And I think the reason he wants Tupu Vaa at 6 is because he wants Tupu Vaa at 6 in Africa, because they're so big, you've got to get your ball and you can't. You have to have multi-line-out options. And so I think he's testing that. And Ireland are a big pack. But, you know, 52 games undefeated, 50 wins and 2 draws. You know, you would think the All Blacks will go in his favourite. He's a great man and a great shark, and one of life's top blokes, Josh Morby. So, really delighted to see him get a shot on the wing. But, you know, deserved shot, not just a gimme. He was sensational last week. And he just brings a different dimension to that left wing spot, so I think that's good. But largely, you would like to think it would be a more dominant All Black performance. I thought, you know, we saw enough, didn't we, against France, that it was sort of, yep, I can see what we're trying to do. And then for 25 minutes, we saw it against Italy. But they're going to have to put in a better performance than that, or they're going to find themselves up against an Irish side. But let's just face it, at some point, this record's going to go. And it's highly motivating, wouldn't it be, if you were an Irishman, to think, well, we won a test series in New Zealand, you know, not so long ago. This is history-making. Nothing to lose. Let's see what happens.
Andy.
I'm just fascinated in the style of rugby that Rennie is playing. The fact that it's just I was going to say all-out attack. I did wonder whether box kicking had been made illegal at some point. But I do think watching that game, I'm not saying I want box kicking. I heard you there squeaking away, Piper. But it is just an interesting style of play. And I think with the way that the All Blacks are attacking from fast ruck ball the whole time, I saw a lot of criticism of the errors they made, and obviously Wallace Setiti made a whole bunch of errors, which was unfortunate and probably fairly unlikely, not usual. But I think we're just going to have to accept a few errors in the way that they're playing the ball and just are attacking so quickly from defence and looking at those opportunities to attack. And I just think it's going to be fascinating to watch how that evolves over the next, over this game and then obviously into South Africa. Just on the Garpies, I watched them play against Scotland, and for all of their size and bulk, they were a bit average. Like, they only just beat the Scots in the end, and the Scots played a fantastic game and came back. I mean, they were 20-odd points down, close to that anyway. And Scotland came back and really put them under pressure. And in fact, it was only a very late try from the South Africans that got them away. So, yeah, interesting. I think it's going to be a fascinating game. And third game, obviously, with Dave Rennie in charge. I'm just interested to see the progression in the style of play and the way they play.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things in that, though. One, that South African team was not their best side, and so you've got to keep that in perspective. And I think, too, I think your point's valid around the box kicking, but I think you have to look at what we did last year. We box kicked a lot, and what actually happened? We didn't go that well. We're poor in the air. We didn't contest very well. And, in fact, teams that box kicked to us found that that was one of our real weaknesses and put us under a massive amount of pressure. What you could determine in that first, particularly that first game where we recycled 85% of our ball inside 3 seconds at ruck time, was really what we're trying to get to. And I think he's on the right track here, because the only way that we're going to be competitive and win in South Africa potentially is we've got to move their big guys around. We've got to play the game at pace, and we've got to get to the edge at pace. And so that's why I think he's looking for a more dynamic loose forward, forward trio that can get around. So he's got, he's kind of toyed around with it, and I think this is the part that I was talking about before with Thai. But I think that what he's recognised is if you go toe-to-toe with Africa and it becomes a forward slog that's based on box kicking and territory, we won't win that. That is absolutely running into their wheelbase. So I think you'll see a little bit more box kicking today. I think you'll see a little bit more of us wanting to dominate territory a little bit more than we've done, but I don't think that you'll see us move away from our game plan, which is to get to the edge and recycle as quickly as we can. And then Roy Gard, particularly on that latter phase four, phases 8, 9, 10, when their forwards start to get slow to ruck time, that's when those gaps start opening up, and that's when we start getting in behind the game line. And so I think that's what you'll see again today.
Okay.
So I think that's the blueprint he's looking at, particularly into Africa.
Okay, we move on to the World Cup final. Andy, I've got to say, we all were picking France to win it. We saw Spain really give France a bit of a toweling. Then we just saw England versus Argentina, and whoa, that was spiteful, I can tell you that.
Yep.
I'm picking Spain in this one, and everyone's going, oh, it's got to be Argentina. I just think Spain is so well disciplined, their side is.
It's absolutely fascinating. Spain, I agree with you, actually, and I think Spain will probably be too good all over the field. I mean, Messi is outstanding, and that second half when England sat back and stupidly tried to defend a one-goal lead, which was the dumbest thing they could have done. They only had 12% possession for that final from 55 minutes to the end of the game, and you just knew Argentina were going to smoke them, and they did it. Messi, I love the quote I saw about Messi. He's short, fat, and old, and still the best player in the world. He is outstanding. The crosses that he puts in are so fast and so accurate that you only need a couple of chances and Argentina will score. But I just think Spain, right across the field, have got that and will probably beat them, I would think. But, boy, it's going to be a hell of a game. I mean, shit, it's just a hell of a game.
Absolutely. What about you, Piper? You be getting up in the morning to watch it?
Well, remember, Spain haven't conceded a goal in the World Cup, so they've got there purely based on their defence. I agree with Tomo there. I came in after England had scored that goal And I had to do a few jobs, and one of them was actually, it required me sitting on my ass for a period of time. I thought, I'll flick it on, because, you know, that TVNZ Plus had been quite hard to get. And I just couldn't believe the England tactic. It was, I think it was the 82nd minute or whatever, and all 11 players were in their half, and they were basically sitting back. And I said to myself out loud, well, no one was listening to me, obviously, this is not going to work, and inside a minute, done. You just tell that it was just a matter of time before that pressure was going to crack. And it's not like they were playing a second-rate side. They were playing Argentina, who have got strike power everywhere. I think Argentina will win this. It potentially will go to extra time. I'd hate for it to go to penalties. I just think that their attack and their ability to absorb pressure for long periods, you saw it in the game against England. I don't think Spain would sit back like England did. But I just think they've got a bit more strike power. And I think it'll be the Argentinian attack versus the Spain defence, which, as I said, has been phenomenal. Having conceded a goal in the tournament, that's a phenomenal. I mean, imagine if they win 1-0 and they go through the whole tournament not having conceded a goal.
Yeah.
The goalkeeper will get a big contract. So, yeah, I'll flip the card on it with you lads, and I'll run with Argentina 1-0.
Okay, so we move on. Warriors are playing tonight at Penrose, and the scheduling in Auckland, we have the Warriors in Penrose, the All Blacks in Kingsland. We have a basketball game at Spark Arena. I've just seen the news. There's a bit of, there's already a train disruption. We've got 70,000 people, close to 80,000 people travelling on around the city. To be honest with you, I really think, obviously, the scheduling, the worry, the NRL's not going to give in to the All Blacks, and the All Blacks aren't going to give in to the NRL, but the Warriors will still be packed, Andy.
Oh, it's a sellout. It's an absolute sellout. Every game is sold out for the Warriors till the end of the season, which is just incredible for them, and the passion of their fans is next level. Look, scheduling is scheduling. Auckland's a big city, and it's frustrating for us sitting at home, but the fact that you can't watch both games live, I'm going to have to turn Tribe down so I don't get... Like, I'm going to watch the All Blacks, and then I'll flick over and hopefully watch the Warriors without knowing the score. But I guess it's just what it is. You've got two different sports, you've got three different codes. I don't think they sit down at the start of the year and just say, OK, we've got this game, can you start your game an hour later? These organisations don't talk to each other. Pots, you know how it works with scheduling, these sort of things. There's just no way that happens. Unfortunately, you get clashes. You make your choice as to what you want to go to. The bottom line is it's almost impossible to get tickets to either game. So if you went for both and you got one, you'd be equally happy, I would have thought.
Well, he'd be in a corporate box.
Well, I think...
I don't know about even Mark.
No, he's been there before. Don't worry, we've both seen the photos. Anyway, you keep talking. I've got to line up a next guest, okay? So keep talking, Piper.
I think I'm looking forward to being hosted next week in the corporate box for the Spurs versus Chelsea game. I'll wave to you, Tomo, from the stand. Sorry, the Auckland FC versus Spurs game. I think you're right. I think the reality of it is it doesn't matter. If one game was not sold out and they were going, well, you know, we would have been sold out if the All Blacks were playing, fair play. But there's no way you could schedule this better. Even if you scheduled the Warriors to start at 9 New Zealand time, you can't get from Eden Park to the Warriors. The only way would have been if they played it tomorrow. You could have then promoted it as a sporting extravagant weekend. I think the bigger play is the first point that Amon brought up, that the trains aren't going. Now, I don't know how many sporting events I've been to at Eden Park and the trains don't go. I went to Billy Joel where they had, the trains aren't working this weekend, they're on line maintenance, and we're going to have buses. Well, you'd have to have 9 million buses to move, you know, 65,000 people, I think it was, that night. It's just ridiculous. And I know that City Rail is going to certainly help. And I know it's going to go, and I think it's like an 8-minute journey from downtown Bryn Mawr into Kingsland, which is going to be great, right outside Eden Park. That'll do wonders. But for a city that size, one of the biggest cities, you know, literally in the world now, Auckland's starting to get to 2 million, you're starting to really cook with gas. To have such a poor train system there, you can't get around with 80 to 100,000 people requiring. It's just a joke. So I think it's a twofold. One, I'm with you, Tom. I think that the reality around the scheduling, that just is what it is. And you're just going to you've got to live with that. And we at home will just record it and then watch it after. But, yeah, I think it's more the transport thing that's a pain.
I think the biggest problem, Piper, and you know as well as I do, in your city and my city here in Christchurch, we've got a stadium in the middle of the city where you can just walk. You don't have to rely on public transport to get to the stadium from the bars of the hospitality. And that's the way to do it. And Auckland had that chance and they blew it back in 2010 or whenever it was. So they made their bed, they got a lie on it. But it is a disgrace. I'm like you. I've been to big events. I don't think I've caught the train yet, to be honest. Every time it's a bus or you just get there early in an Uber and then you just figure out how to get home later. It is an absolute disgrace, Eden Park.
Andy, I'll just say this. You're lucky when you said bus. I was expecting a comment around a goal card from Piper. But we must move on. Piper, can you just finish it off and just give us quickly what is happening with New Zealand netball, what you're hearing?
Well, it will be quick, Eamon, because nothing.
Good. I can go to... Because I've got poor old Seamus having the agony of listening to used to, gentlemen.
Well, that's the upshot of it. Like, nothing. The players, understandably, have literally been released to play wherever they want in the world. Netball New Zealand has yet to deliver any kind of firmness around what's happening with the competition next year. They've delivered nothing in terms of what the options will be in terms of funding. They've offered nothing in terms of not only a competition, but a broadcast partner. So all of their players, including Silver Ferns, who are currently sitting over in Glasgow waiting for the Commonwealth Games to try and get a gold medal for their country, are basically jobless as it sits right now. And I don't think there's been enough done about it, because this is an absolute disgrace. You can say what you want about netball. It's still number one New Zealand game by participation for females, and words don't describe what a shambolic state has been left. And clearly there's a new CEO and a new board coming in. Doesn't sit with them, but serious questions and finger pointing have to happen to some that are within the organisation now who remain nameless, certainly to the board, the previous board, and some members of that board, and definitely regards the senior management. Disgrace.
Anyway, I have to cut it short there because I've got the great Seamus Martin, who's waiting so patiently there, and I hope that he hasn't, but he definitely hasn't fallen asleep. I think he was probably mildly entertained by you gentlemen. Lee, thank you so much. Andy, thank you so much. I will catch up with you next week, Andy, at some point. Obviously, we're not in a corporate box. And Piper, I may catch up with you next weekend.
If I'm at the ground and you both see me, don't come up to me, because I'm with important people. I can't be seen to be talking to you two. So just don't acknowledge me. And I'll see you at Father Ted's, which is a little bit later on.
Yeah, well, it might be a bit downstream for Mr. Thompson. Anyway, we'll cut it there. Thanks, guys. Bye.
See you later, bye.
Cheers.
See you, guys.
And that was the panel, and I have to apologise. Waiting on line three, Seamus. I hope that you hope those two guys didn't put you off to sleep.
No. Quite entertaining chat, actually. Those two, interesting thoughts. I know what they're saying around Auckland and stadium wise as well. I'll leave netball to them, but Auckland and stadiums. I think the World Cup sport, the live watching experience for me, I'll sport for choice over in North America. That's for sure.
Absolutely. Well, we're going to kick it off. We're going to go to America. Obviously, we haven't been given a President's Award for your great service in America for New Zealand, but it is the World Cup final, Argentina versus Spain. It is, many would say that is the final. That was the final. Many were picking France, Argentina, but Spain, they've conceded, what is it, one goal in the whole tournament? Or no goals?
Yeah, that's right. And one goal, six clean sheets.
And you have a look at it, Argentina. England, really, they've really got to have a hard look at themselves. If I was Thomas Tuchel, I'm not doing it because he played for Manchester United, I would have brought on Marcus Rashford earlier to actually attack that game. They sort of looked like they parked the bus.
They did. It was a case of survive rather than go and try and win. And I think this result will be raked over for years and years to come. Just didn't seem to get it right. And as soon as they took the lead, it flipped the switch and the Argentinians didn't. I think all credit has to go to Argentina. I think we can put the boot into England, but let's change the focus and look at the positive side. They came out, they wanted to win that game. They made attacking changes. And, you know, 39 years old, Lionel Messi's still doing the business. I know people in the fallout have been saying, you've got to put a man on him, you've got to do this, you've got to do that. he started asking different questions as soon as the shape of the game changed. He drifted inside to try and find free kicks. That didn't happen. He went out onto the right-hand side, onto his so-called weaker foot. The delivery for that ball for Martinez to header for the winner is absolutely sumptuous. It's the cross of the century. So while I am an England fan, and while I am bitterly disappointed that the result didn't go the way of the Three Lions, I can only stand and marvel at this guy Messi, because you know the only people I think that'll be even more disappointed than England fans will be Cristiano Ronaldo fans, because any conversation about the greatest of all time surely gets put to bed now. Messi at 39, staring down the barrel of being the captain of the first side to go back-to-back in a World Cup since Brazil in 1962, he's standing on the edge of greatness with the great Pelé in my mind. On the other side, I think Spain have really flown under the radar for a team that is so good. They're unbeaten in 37 matches, Eamon. 6 clean sheets in the competition out of 7. 1 goal conceded. And they just erased France from that semi-final. It was like France weren't even there. And I think it's a case, really, of looking at the positives of both Spain and Argentina rather than the shortcomings of France and England in terms of this World Cup final. It's going to be a really interesting clash of the best defence in the competition, Spain, 1 goal conceded, against the best attack in the competition, Argentina, 19 goals scored. And I think I'm going to sit and favour Argentina. And the reason I favour Argentina is they've just been able to find a way in these games. Cabo Verde, round of 32, they found a way. Egypt, round of 16, 2-0 down, they found a way. Switzerland, quarterfinal, at 1-1, all the momentum with Switzerland, they find a way. England go 1-0 up with 5 minutes to play, they find a way. For me, they are going to be unstoppable in this. The only thing that might stand in their way is if Spain get this possession-based football, which they don't budge from, and they choke them out of the match. But I think Argentina win. I think if Spain win, it's a better side than 2010. I think they're on the verge of a Euro and a World Cup double. And look, it's got all the makings of a classic, but as we've seen in some of these games at World Cup final stage before, Eamon, as I'm sure you've seen a few over the years, sometimes they can be a fizzer too, and they can be a 1-0 and just a penalty decides it. So, look, I'm really excited about Monday, but yeah, in terms of how those two semi-finals played, let's look at the positives and the beautiful football that was played rather than the absolute choke that England had and the no-show that France had.
Absolutely, and of course then, obviously, there's been a lot of rumours going around and a lot of players in the transfer market, New Zealand players now. Alex Bolson has been given a loan move to Motherwell, which is the club of Elijah Justin. I don't think Elijah's going to be around there for long, but we'll come to that in a moment. But that is a solid move for Alex Bolson.
Yeah, I think it's a move that guarantees him more football, which is what he needs. I think he'll be feeling, after the World Cup experience, desperately unlucky that he didn't get an opportunity to step foot on the field for the All Whites at the World Cup. He will be the number one in 4 years' time. I don't think there's any doubt in anybody's mind around that. So the more football he can play, the better for AP and the better for the All Whites. And I think the move from Poland, where he was last year, where he was a little bit out of the spotlight, he was getting good minutes, but the club got relegated, had a busy season. Motherwell are a club that seem to be going through a bit of a purple patch here. The number one has moved on to Queen's Park Rangers. The incumbent number one, I should say, has moved on to Queen's Park Rangers. So it opens the path for Paulson to put his best foot forward and hopefully be keeping goals for Motherwell in the Scottish Premier League through the season, which is a great move for him.
And of course, Sapri Singh will be moving to Portugal. It's the Portugal second division. I was sort of hoping that maybe we could have got him here at Auckland FC, because I think we could have got the best out of him. But he's staying in Europe. He's trying to crack that European market.
Yeah, as you're saying, Sarpreet Singh to the Portuguese second division. You can't see me, but I'm sort of wincing as well, because I had hoped for Sarpreet it would be a move to a top tier division or at least to a first division competition. I can understand why he wants to play in Portugal. It's a good style of football for him. It's not overly physical. It's a technical style. It is going to be one of the locations where the World Cup is held in 4 years' time. So if he can secure a good season here and maybe get his team up or get to move to the Portuguese first division, it puts him in front of the eyeballs of the people that he might be playing in front of in 4 years' time. I think, like AP, for Sarpreet, the most important thing for him is that he's playing regular minutes. I think he only turned out 2 times for the Wellington Phoenix when he came back on loan. For him, It's about playing regular football, about playing as much as he possibly can so that he can be firing on all cylinders for the All Whites in games like the matches against India that we're going to see back here in New Zealand in November. So, look, I'm happy he's found a club. That's the first part. I would have liked, like you, for it to have been, you know, maybe somewhere closer to home where he can play regularly and rebuild that confidence, or a division slightly higher where he's testing himself at a higher level. But I think, again, like a lot of our players, what the World Cup experience showed is that they need to be playing regularly at high levels against good opponents so they can better themselves, so that it helps our national team.
Absolutely. Hey, listen, just some other rumours. Luke Brooks-Smith looks like he could be moving to Portsmouth, which I think's a good move. Obviously, we've got Eli Finn Sermon. Obviously, there's talk about him. Callum McCourt, I believe that some people have just said that he is definitely in the market for a move.
Yeah, again, with those three players, you know, let's deal with them one by one. McCourt's done a really good job in the Danish First Division. I think he's a player that would benefit from a move to a higher level. Finn Sermon, I think that's just a move. It's just a timing thing for Finn. I think there's no doubt in my mind that he's going to be departing the Portland Timbers. They'd be crazy not to cash in on his stocks while they are high after the World Cup performance. The Luke Brooks-Smith one, I think, is really interesting. I think he benefits from being a dual passport holder, so has a British passport, so probably a little bit easier for him to go there. I personally don't think a move to Portsmouth is the best in terms of his football development. I think it's a great move, great lifestyle experience and a great environment to be going in, but I don't think he'll be playing first-team football anytime soon if he is at Portsmouth. He might get loaned out to a lower division club. I would have liked to have seen him stay in and around the A-League. It's clear that Chris Greenacre is having a bit of a clear out down there at the Wellington Phoenix. Yeah. A number of players are moving on. I think Greenacre's got a lot of work to do in the recruitment phase between now and when the A-League kicks off, but clear that Luke Brooks-Smith's not part of his plans moving forward. So good for him to secure a move. You want him to be moving onwards and upwards, or at least staying at the same level, but I'm just not sure Portsmouth is the right move for him. But look, I'd love to be proved wrong.
Absolutely. We move on to Northern League football, and as I just said, obviously we've got a clear winner, but for the other places for National League, it's like the Southern Motorway around 5 p.m. at night. It's congested, but we will start it off. East Coast Bays versus Bay Olympic, Auckland City FC versus Tauranga City, Eastern Suburbs versus Manukau. Well, the first one, Eastern Suburbs versus Manukau, you have to say Eastern Suburbs on that, but the other two games, your thoughts?
Yeah, you're right about the Southern Motorway, and it's actually all of these clubs, you could pull off the motorway and you'd be at their home grounds. Look, I think Auckland City versus Tauranga, Auckland City in second place, 33 points, should be too strong. Although I see Nathan Garrow's got himself a move to the South African Premier League, the goalkeeper for Auckland City, again, which is great to see our players coming out of the Northern League and moving into professional environments. So I don't think that's going to dampen their chances. They should be too strong from the team from Bay of Plenty. East Coast Bay sitting in fifth place, just outside that top four. I know you tip them most weeks, and I'm going to join you here and tip them to beat Bay Olympic, who are struggling at the moment, down in 11th place. No chance of relegation with the restructure to the National Leagues at the end of the season, but East Coast Bays, Auckland City and Eastern Suburbs for me are the teams that win those first three matches.
Okay, so then we move on to Auckland United versus Western Springs, Birkenhead versus Melville, Auckland FC Reserves versus Fencibles. Well, I know what you're picking in the Birkenhead Melville game, and it's a draw. It's an absolute.
You've got it. You know me well enough by now to know that when Melville's up against it, I'm going to go with a draw. But yeah, Birko are running away with the league, so I think a draw is a fair result there. Don't you?
Yeah, I might have another thing. Imagine trying to travel. Imagine trying to get around Auckland City today. It's going to be an absolute nightmare for some of these visiting team like Melville. Anyway. Auckland United versus Western Springs. You'd have to go for Auckland United.
Yeah, it's not the same Western Springs that we saw last year, the Northern League champions. Auckland United on 28 points, sitting in sixth. They're in within touching distance of the top four, and they need to win and keep winning to stay in the conversation. I think at home they'll be too strong for Western Springs. Auckland FC Reserves versus Fences is the last game of the round, and Fences are sitting in third. A real surprise package for me, Fencibles United, but they're doing ever so well. I think they should have too much strength for an Auckland FC side that'll probably have a number of those players turning out next week against Tottenham Hotspur. Let's not forget that game on the horizon, and I think a few of the youngsters out of Auckland FC Reserves will find themselves stripping up for the first team because their stocks are pretty low at the moment as well.
Absolutely. And then we go Northern League Women's Premiership. It is Western Springs versus Melville, Fencibles versus, these are the three games for the weekend, Fencibles versus Tauranga Moana, and of course Ellerslie versus Eastern Suburbs. That first game, you're probably going to go for a draw, are you?
I'm actually going to tip our Melville girls to win that one. We won there on the first match of the season. It's a Western Springs side that are going through a changing dynamic. I fancy us on an away trip to win that one over at Seddon Field. So I'm going to say Melville win that game against Western Springs. I think Fencibles account for Tauranga Moana pretty comfortably. And Eastern Suburbs, I think, will tip up Ellerslie away from home. Last night result, Auckland United coming back off the OFC Women's Champions League victory, third in a row for them, beating West Coast Rangers. They'll be in action midweek against Eastern Suburbs in a catch-up game as well. So look, Auckland United, for me, I think they still look odds on to win the title there, but I think the top four is pretty much established there. It's just a case of who finishes where. It's a pretty clear top four, bottom four competition in the Women's Premier League.
Absolutely. Well, Seamus, I probably will have to give you a call today. As you can probably see, I've got to get a few ads out in the next break with Watto and Summerfield. And so I'm going to give you a call a bit later if you're free for a chat. And I have to say, 6 years I've been on air, and I've had some football correspondents, and I have to say I've gone from Brenda McNeice, who we all know is a character. We've had Noel Barclay, and we've had yourself, and I have to say, all of you, and especially you, Seamus, you've always made the time for me, and I really appreciate what you've done for me and the show. And I have to say a big congratulations to you and your mate Steve Holloway on what you have done with your podcast, Between Two Beers.
Oh, very kind. Thank you so much, mate. I really appreciate it. We'll catch up soon.
Yep, sure. Sorry we can't have a chat. Okay, catch you later, Seamus. Bye.
See ya.
Seamus Martin. Okay, apologies there. I've been running a bit late. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to have to double up on the ads in the next segment. Obviously, cricket has been in the news with Brendan McCullum and the Black Caps in the West Indies. I was at a function yesterday, but I was able to get out during the function to speak to the wonderful Garth Galloway, who was overseas at the time, but yet again makes time for me. So let's go for it.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, or good morning it is. This is a pre-recording, and we're going to talk a bit of cricket, and here to talk to us is renowned cricket commentator, Garth Galloway. Garth, good afternoon, or where you are in the world, and it's good afternoon here in Auckland, and I hope that you're having a good day so far.
We're having a great day, mate. A little bit further advanced than you. Just after 1 p.m. in Bali, and having a beautiful time here, mate. It's 27 degrees each day, and it's just a great place to slow down and enjoy life at a very reasonable price as well, I might add.
Yeah, well, that's always good, going to Bali. Anyway, cricket. Well, New Zealand had a leading 2-1 in the one-day series in the West Indies, and of course we lost that first one-day, Garth, and I felt it, and we were heading towards a big total, but we lost our way in that first one-day.
Yeah, they did. I think it's hard, though, when you come back after... I know that they're used to playing different forms of the game all the time, but that first one, you know, it was a mediocre score, I think, on a much better batting pitch than we've seen in the next two pitches in Providence. But I can understand how New Zealand fell away a bit in the first game. And then I thought Casey, you know, Carty and Shai Home were fantastic. We saw Hope in New Zealand last year. I mean, he is a terrific player, beautiful striker of the ball and white ball cricket in particular. But then, you know, you look at how New Zealand have recovered and they knocked the West Indies out for 141 and 140 in the next two games. Mm-hmm. They've managed to get those runs, you know, knocked off quickly. And you're seeing, which has just been fantastic. I mean, here we are today, after today's game, having 8 wickets taken by spin bowlers by New Zealand.
Oh,
you know,
brilliant,
fantastic
yeah.
to see. Yeah, Blaisel. Lennox, of course, and Santner's bowling was terrific today. So, you know, again, I just love seeing spinners striving for New Zealand, and I think they've done a terrific job. And now off to Bridgetown with the series 2-1 in favour of New Zealand. And you just hope that you'll get a pitch with just a little bit more life in it to enable the batsman to thrive a wee bit more. Not that I mind ball dominating bat, as you know.
Absolutely. Well, looking at it, Jaden Lennox, he got 5 wickets in the second international and 4 today. 9 wickets so far in the series, but you mentioned Mitch Santner. The West Indies could not, they struggled against him.
Well, he is a world-class white ball bowler, Mitch Santner. He's been around a long time now. He's very wily. He's played in T20 leagues all around the world. A very experienced ODI cricketer as well. And as I say, I think one of the best in the world. And when he takes the pace off and the ball drops and things, he's very hard to get to. You know, you really have to be, you have your wits about you, and you've got to be able to use your feet. And I think that's where the West Indians, you know, they're very good at the big bash sort of stuff. They love striking the ball good and hard, but if it's not there and you have to use your feet, that's where Santner comes into his own, and he's an absolute master of it. And isn't it nice to see Lennox succeeding?
He's been outstanding.
Yeah, he has, and I've said to you how much I like him and how much I hope that he keeps getting another go. And I think what you're seeing here again, and you'll recall in the Test series when they brought in Tickner and Michael Ray with 70 and 90 first class games respectively, you know, you're looking at a guy like Jaden Lennox, who's played a lot of cricket now and just starting out in his international career, and you see the benefit of all of the runs in the bank, so to speak, in terms of experience. And I think all that first class cricket that he's played the one-day competition at home, the Super Smash, and so on, the T20 and the Ford Trophy, he really has benefited, and he's able to translate. And the conditions, you know, sure, the conditions have been in the bowler's favour in terms of spinning it, but they've used it to their advantage, and they've done very well.
Well, what we're seeing now from this New Zealand cricket team is depth, and we've got a lot of depth now, Garth, which we've never had in the past.
Yep. Look, I agree, and I think also, I mean, we've seen Fisher coming into this series, who I think's bowled quite nicely in conditions that didn't really suit him. He hasn't taken a wicket yet, but he hasn't been too uneconomical, and I think there's some real promise there. You have Duffy coming back into the series, who not long ago was the number one T20 bowler in the world. There's an awful lot of strength, and of course you see Henry Nicholls in the one-day environment again getting runs. Latham, who is such a key part of the ODI side, and he very underestimated, I think, in terms of how, you know, batting at 5 or 6, Tom, and able to come in and play either role, you know, accelerating the scoring, or if they're in a little bit of trouble, playing in innings off moment and just working the ball around and so on. He's a very skillful player. So yes, you've got a little bit of inexperience, which is doing very well, and a lot of experience that continues to perform. And again, I think of players like Chapman, Mitchell, Young, who's getting another go and doing well. You know, there's a lot of great cricketing now in there, and a very good team spirit.
Absolutely, and of course, during the week, well, the news we expected, I think it didn't surprise us. Brendan McCullum was sacked as England Test coach. He stays on in the white ball game, Garth, and I think this is a big thing. Everyone's saying, "Oh, can we get him to New Zealand?" Well, he's contracted to the ECB. But it didn't surprise me after the New Zealand series.
No, look, to be honest with you, and you know he's a great mate, and we've spent a lot of time together over many years, but I thought after what happened in the Australian series, he was perhaps fortunate to hold his job. And then I think once they lost 2-1 to New Zealand, unfortunately you had the nightclub incident with Atkinson and Stokes. And I think one day, the real story behind that will come out. I think we don't know it at the moment. It's pretty clear that Stokes feels, I think, a little bit embittered about how it was all handled. But once those things happened, and the way England played, for me, it's an ironic thing, isn't it? You go back to, you look at the era that he's introduced, and I think history will judge him well in terms of what he brought in and the excitement and all of those things. But in a way, you sort of feel like, even though they've produced some interesting players, some good players, you sort of feel like they're kind of back where they were when he started. And it'll be very interesting to see where England goes from here. There's talk at the moment of Andy Flower possibly being the coach. I've heard a whisper about Stephen Fleming, maybe Justin Langer. All interesting options. I love the idea if they could entice Andy Flower back there. I think he would bring in some much-needed discipline in terms of the structure and the way that they play. He's been, of course, a coach, 2009 to 2013, when England won the Ashes three times. Mm-hmm. His record as a player and coach is nothing short of remarkable, and he would certainly be my number one pick. Brendan, of course, gets the opportunity, and it's nice to see that England have gone to the top of the T20 rankings in ICC World Cricket, having beaten India handsomely in a recent series, and of course they're just performing nicely in that one-day international series against India as well. So he'll have his moments, I'm sure, and I think the white ball team will do well and respond well under him. And I think he deserves a massive amount of credit for the way that he's handled the media. I think he's been, I kind of feel so proud of him in the way that he has said, look, this is the swings and roundabouts. I've absolutely loved it. It's been amazing. But when the results don't go your way, this is what happened, and it's fine. And he will be hurting. Make absolutely no mistake. He will be hurting. But I love his, he lives by the sword and he dies by it, and that's Brendan.
And you're dead right there, Garth. You know, Brendan McCullum has he has taken what he took from when he was captain of the Black Caps to the coaching arena, and I think he deserves all that credit. I think he's been brilliant. He will be finding it hard. Looking at this, obviously Andy Flower would be the obvious choice, but also we've just had some news come in, Garth, that Luke Ronchi will be stepping down from the Black Caps coaching jobs to take the top job at the Melbourne Renegades.
Yeah, I see that. Well, good on him. I mean, that's a fantastic promotion for Luke, and it shows you that that when you look at people in these setups having an individual speciality like a batting coach, a fielding coach, a bowling coach, or whatever, it shows you that there are opportunities for them in world cricket to move on, and plenty of franchises operating. And in Melbourne, I think he's in the Renegades. He's got a really interesting franchise, a lot of good players there. The Big Bash competition's fantastic, and I think it just shows you that the New Zealand coaching and players setups, all people are well sought after because they're respected. And again, I come back to when I look at how New Zealand beat England in that test series, I just thought their maturity, their class, their sense of responsibility for each other, they were well and truly set apart from England in all of those respects. And, I think the people in the New Zealand setup, they've got to be guarded carefully because they'll be sought after.
Absolutely, and of course, when you looked at that cricket podcast, Back to Cricket, when some of the experts there, they rated them the best team, pound for pound, for what we have in this country, that they're rated so highly overseas, our players and especially our coaching IP.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, Rob Walters has come in and picked it up from Gary Stead, whose record was wonderful. And Rob is now, stamping his own mark on the side and doing his own thing and doing it very well. I just sense that he might be prepared to take a few more risks than Gary was.
Yes.
I kind of like that because, again, I think for us to stay at the top, every now and then we're going to have to do that. But pound for pound, we're by far, I think, the best side in the world. And I think when you look at the coaching, Mike Hess and Gary Stead, and now Rob, they've got a huge part to play in that. And they've led it extremely well. But I think the thing that sets everybody apart in that cap is the culture of the side. Very, very few issues, no controversies, getting on, playing the game in a good spirit, which, of course, is something that McCullum started. You know, and looked at why in 2013 when they were bowled out for 45 in Johannesburg by South Africa, went back to the hotel and thought, why don't people like us? And people didn't like them because they were perceived as being arrogant. And he led the charge to bring the humility back in there, and there it remains. And that's something that New Zealand sides should hang on to. And if you lose it, it's hard to get it back again. So I think what we're seeing, you can trace these things all the way back and see how the legacy continues and how different leadership pools in New Zealand cricket have wanted to play the game in that way. And I feel immensely proud of them, if I'm allowed to, as a sort of follower. Yeah. You know, I think they're very lovable.
I think they're very likable, Garth, and I'd have to agree with you there. Garth, it sounds as though that you're having a wonderful time wherever you are in the world. And
well, you've probably got a few sound effects. I'm on a main road in Seminyak. There's scooters galore. It's wonderful. It's a good lively sign. I'm going to go and have some fish tacos, which have arrived. So I'll bid you farewell.
Yeah, well, you enjoy your fish tacos and your beer, sir, and have a wonderful rest of a holiday.
Bye-bye.
Cheers.
Yeah,
thanks, Garth.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Yeah, cheers.
And that was Garth Galloway. And I have to say, Garth has been a huge part of the show for the 6 years. He's been our cricket guy, and he's just brilliant. Anyway, if you're looking to buy, looking to sell, looking to get on this Auckland property market, well, there's a team that are based out of the Barford and Thompson Epsom office. Their names are Robert and Deborah Thompson. Robert, who has been a proud supporter and been a big fan and follower of this show. Deborah's wife, what a hell of a good sort. And I can tell you something, I know people that have sold houses Rob and Deborah have sold houses for, and all they can say, glowing reports, easy to deal with. They know their stuff, and they're just damn good people. So give Robert a call. His number is 021 737 949. If you can't get hold of Robert, give Deborah a call, 021 673 600. So next up, we'll just get to the panel.
Remember last time I thanked you, keeping my distance unintentionally. Too close for comfort, just staying close enough. If I could have more time, we would brainstorm. And I love you tender, but we must walk away. Keeping you on my greeting card file. And if it were different, but you know it ain't. Let's get on with it, love. Call me loyal. I'll say you're loyal too. I know you're loyal. I feel you're loyal too. Call me loyal. I'll hold you loyal too. We are loyal.
Welcome everyone back to the Sports Weekend. Just before we go to our next guest, if you're looking for your local in Mount Eden, or if you're looking for somewhere to go to before the game at Eden Park, or before you even go to the Warriors, make your way to the Horse and Trap. It's your local in Mount Eden. They have some of the best, so many good beers on taps, fine wines. Also, the food there, absolutely superb. And I have to say, service there, the staff all always have a smile. So get to the Horse and Trap. They're based at 3 Enfield Street in Mount Eden. Their number is 09630 3055, or you can email them info@horseandtrap. Well, been doing this 6 years come Monday, and I always thought that we always believed we needed a panel of two good personalities, and one I've known for a long time. And 6 years ago, there was a guy I listened to on the radio who I enjoyed as well too, and who's also ended up to be a big mate of mine. I'd just like to welcome them on board. On line one, the man, the legend, Mark Watson. Good morning to you, mate.
Ni hao. I'm up in China, as you can tell, with that wonderful little bit of Cantonese, little bit of Chinese there that I just threw out on the table, just showing my deep intellect.
Well, you've always had a deep intellect, Mark. We all know that. On line two, the silver tongue, silver fox, Sean Summerfield. Good morning, sir.
How are you, mate?
I'm going to say something that has changed from 6 years. When I first done this, I'd usually end up cutting one or both ears off at the same time.
I tell you what's happened in 6 years for me, Amon, is I've become a lot greyer and I've lost a lot of my hair.
Yeah, well, yeah.
I'm not sure I put it down to this particular segment. It's either that or marriage, one of the two, I'm not sure.
Anyway, we'll kick it off here, guys. Mark, All Blacks versus Ireland. Dave Rennie's made a few changes. Josh Morby gets a run on the wing. Obviously, he's put Tupu Vaiatua at blindside flanker. And the Irish team, well, you do not underestimate this Irish team. They're very, very experienced.
Yeah, look, I've always been a bit of a fan of Tupu Vaiatua. So I thought he actually played quite well there last year. You know, you need that line-out option, as he said. You've got to have three tall jumpers. It's still an aerial. I don't think we've really settled on just yet that makeup of the loose forwards. It's a good side. I would have preferred, to be honest, just to see something slightly different in the front row this week. I'm sort of a little bit tired of constantly chasing games. I rate Ethan de Groot at the highest level, no problem. But I'd love to just see Xavier Numier get us started, maybe Armour, and just see what we can do in terms of maybe just getting a few more sort of post-contact metres and just... Yeah, maybe just, I don't know, maybe going into half-time with a decent lead. I just think they're different types of players, and we're sort of relying on that injection of energy coming off the bench with the likes of Segner and Lakai as well. It's a good side. I mean, Morby, obviously, stunning last week, but I sort of always felt he was. I always felt there was a bit of a Ben Smith element to him. He carries beautifully in both hands. He's a big man as well. I still think there's a question mark over the centre-midfield combination. You know, everyone's dead set on Jordan Barrett sitting 5, hell of a footballer, but we always seem to be making change at centre. And I don't know, I'd love to see a test with Quintu Pia starting at second 5 and somebody outside of him, whether that be Anton Lennox-Brown, and just see if that might be a better combination. And I don't know what that means for Jordan Barrett. I know how good he is, but... maybe at fullback, but that just doesn't seem to be quite gelling, and everyone seems to be placing it purely on the centre rather than the combination as a whole. Look, we're going to get peppered under the high ball today by Jamison Gibson-Park, aren't we? I'm still not sure that we know how to deal with it. It still amazes me how little the All Black coaches tend to play it down when asked about it. I see they've been using some sort of weird glasses or something to try and better themselves out. Look, it's just one of those things. It just requires a hell of a lot of practice. And I just don't think we practice enough at it under the high ball. So, look, it's at the Eden Park, 32 years now. I think it was the second test one we played, wasn't it, against the French back in 94, the try from the end of the world, was it? Philippe Saint-André, I think, might have been the try scorer that day. So, look, there's a lot to play for. But, yeah, I think I'm not sure that Irish forward pack's as strong as it has been. But, look, I just want to see us get off to a really positive start. I just want us to see us reduce the errors, play a little bit more through the forwards at times. And, you know, and when we play with pace, it just doesn't need to be helter-skelter for the full 80 minutes.
Sean, your thoughts?
Oh, yeah, I'm interested by the backs. You know, I like Jordy. I'm still to be really convinced by, well, you know, Anton Lennox-Brown, he just, I don't know, to me he's never sparked. He's solid, but I don't think he's solid enough. Is when McKenzie's named, is it because they can't depend on Love staying on the bloody field? Because he's so prone, his discipline's so poor. There's a whole lot of stuff going on there that just frustrates me. I accept this is a bit experimental, as it would be early on. But then again, Ireland have a pretty strong lineup. This is a true test. Yeah, obviously it wasn't anywhere near a full-strength France. I was unconvinced by Italy. I think the score was probably the most flattering All Blacks score I've seen in a long time. I think interesting, I think Argentina played like Ireland used to against the All Blacks. Come out strong and almost held them there. But, yeah, I don't know, just something, it's not quite right. But back to Morby, I think that's awesome. And I think we talked about it a couple of weeks back. He's a bloke who, you know, did it the old school way. He shone in Super Rugby, and he's come through later on in the career. And I think it's just awesome. Rugby needs those stories. You know, it can't just be players that get in the computer and stay there. I know I'm a bit old fashioned, but I just love that.
Absolutely. And I'd have to agree, Josh Morby to me, you know, I just like, this is a guy that didn't have a Super Rugby contract 3 or 4 years ago, went overseas, came back, and has proven to be a really good player. One of the things that interests me about this All Black side is that, you know what, I just feel this is going to be a lot closer than it was, and the midfield really concerns me, especially the way Minicello went through Billy Proctor. Now, Quintipiah is probably there by default, guys.
Yeah, look, I think like I've said, sorry, mate, we're just, that 13 just gives me the shits, to be quite honest.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, there is just something that's just still not quite settled about this All Black side. Look, we need to make a statement tonight. We genuinely do. You know, look, people can say we made a statement against Italy. I gave us a 51 out of 100. I thought if it was a school exam, we got 51%, even though the score flattered us. We were good for 20, 25 minutes, and that's when we scored our tries, but we weren't good for the rest of that match, and we've got to be better than that. It's sort of, people talk about Anton Leonard-Brown. I'm not as harsh on him. I hear what people are saying, but at the moment he doesn't make a lot of mistakes, Anton Leonard-Brown, to be honest. Does he slice sides open? Is he Conrad Smith? Maybe not, but is he the best of the rest at the moment in terms of continuity? Look, I think it's a really big test tonight for Quintipiah at centre. He is a pure second five, and here we are again trying to just get the best players on the park. Damien McKenzie playing at fullback, and Will Jordan on the wing is another example of that, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, that's become a loves prone discipline.
Yeah. If Will Jordan is a winger and they've said, hey, he's going to be a winger, well, let's find a fullback. Let's go out and find a genuine fullback then, and play him at fullback and put Damien McKenzie back on the bench. He's very good from broken play, isn't he? He's obviously very, very good from broken play, and a guy that I think is more effective coming off the bench a little bit. Luke Jacobson's another one for me. Like, I mean, obviously Dave really, really, really rates this guy. I always felt that he's had a lot of time in the All Black jersey. He's another one that's never really made an impact for me. He obviously played well against France in that first test, but I don't know, I would have started Anton Segner. I just wanted to see a little bit more athleticism and some real energy in there, and just a guy who's just so damn passionate about it that's going to just get us. But look, you know, they obviously, you know, they 24/7 with these guys. They see them in training every day. They understand their personalities. They see some of the subtleties that we don't see as fans. And so, look, I think it's a really big test match for Luke Jacobson again tonight to, I don't know, convince the public that this is just not a little bit of a love story between Dave Rennie. And look, every coach has their sort of love child, I guess, if I can use that terminology, that player that they tend to favour, that the rest of us maybe at times can't quite understand.
I'm just thinking of old Rita playing back in the old Canterbury days there, old Philpott.
We won't go there.
Don't you love the on the bench, Sean Jansen for
Ireland?
Brilliant,
you know, great 2021. Story.
Yeah, juggling jobs or playing for North Otago. I just think that's amazing.
Yeah.
But isn't that also just an example, too, though, of just how poor our pathways are? How a guy like this can go overseas, get into a different environment and shine, yet over here wouldn't even get a look. And you wonder how many of those types of players are around New Zealand. And I think that's sometimes an area we need to look at. We need to, you know, we've got to stop just looking at players who have got, you know, who are flashy every week, who, you know, might have high social media numbers or have been on the cover of Women's Day or whatever. But, you know, I've always said it, the talent's in this country. I think the system sometimes lets the talent down.
It's the computer. I think they're a bit lazy at times. But then again, though, can I grumble about one thing? how the hell have they made this clash of fixtures? I know there's a bit of complication, but the NRL fixture was confirmed 3 days before the games were announced for the Nations Championship, and nothing was confirmed for Auckland at that stage. It was only confirmed in March. I'm just gobsmacked at the clash. I know this is a marquee match of the three, and it's got to, I guess, be in Auckland, but is that arrogance on rugby's part to think they're bigger than the Absolutely. Warriors? Because I don't know if they are right now.
Well, absolutely, it's arrogance, and they're not bigger than the Warriors in Auckland. They'll be, but you know, it's South out tonight. It's the All Blacks Island, of course it is. But week in, week out, I mean, the Warriors own the Auckland market. There's absolutely no doubt about it. Auckland is a rugby league city. If you were to actually have to make a statement on where the two games sit.
Oh, yeah, well, they're just a better show all round. That's just the simple fact now.
Yep. Anyway, we move on. World Cup final. Sean, I looked at these semi-finals. They've been fantastic. Spain versus Argentina. Spain has conceded one goal the whole damn tournament. This Argentina, well, you're going to say it, Messi is a freak.
He is. And look, the football's been amazing, the way it's captured. And I'm just going to say it, no one does sporting events as well as America. To me, sort of a step away from it is being the best World Cup to watch. There's something about the vibe about it. Maybe there's something I'm missing by not looking close enough, but I'm just loving all this. I'm captured by it. I mean, you could not script Argentina England. and although we've found out that I think Argentinian fans are a match for English fans for being dickheads after a game, but it's, just amazing.
Absolutely. And of course, what's your thoughts on this match on Monday morning? Well, it'll be Monday evening your time or Sunday evening.
Yeah, I'm actually on a bloody aeroplane out of China actually during the damn final. Like, I literally leave at about 12:50. I think a game starts at 1 a.m. China time.
So, oh, no.
Yeah, it's not ideal. Look, it's Yamine Lamal, isn't it, the future of the game versus probably the greatest player that's ever played the game in Messi. And I've had a bit of a think about it. Like, I obviously never got to see Pelé really play, you know, but it was always Pelé when I was sort of, you know, in my early part of my life. And then I was lucky enough to see the likes of Diego Maradona, the hand of God, and that great goal against England in 86, and the likes of the Ronaldos and the Ronaldinhos and some of those players. But you just watch the little subtle touches that this guy's got, not just his goal-scoring ability. I mean, people can look at Ronaldo, you know, the Portuguese Ronaldo, the Ronaldo at the moment. But he's a goal-scorer. He's not necessarily a creator. This Messi, I mean, man, that ability to put the ball on a dime, his ability to take a corner and just cause chaos every time that ball's crossed in. You know, the accuracy of the passes, and then his lively little touches, and, you know, you give him room, he'll rip you apart. You allow him to play with a little bit of freedom out wide, he rips you apart. And, yeah, and then you've got young Yamine Lamal for Spain. It's funny, I'm actually working in a sort of contracted through Chinese TV up here, but all through a Spanish company, so I've probably got a little bit of loyalty to Spain. But I don't know. I think if England allowed Argentina, they just sat back. They just gave up. It was appalling. Thomas Tuchel actually ended up just becoming Gareth Southgate, didn't he? It's like, mate, you've got to, you know, you're up by one goal. You've actually got to start pressing high, start sitting on the defenders, not just sitting back, and start playing football, and they didn't. And then, yeah, you just saw that Argentinian team just come alive. It's a hell of a final. There's a part of me that wants Spain to win, but there's also a part of me that just wants to really continue to just absolutely endorse the legend of Messi, and he goes back to back. So, look, I'm probably a neutral observer, to be honest, on this one. But, yeah, look, they, as Sean said, they just do it incredibly well. I've actually enjoyed it more. And I think the whole world buys into it more, even more than the Olympics. The Olympics has just got so many sports. This is one sport. And, man, you know, the Americans will be sitting back going, we think NFL is big, but how big is football globally?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And it is. You said it last week. It's bigger than the Olympics at the moment. Obviously, we've got the Warriors on at the same time. But Sean, Liam Lawson.
Yeah, and I'm going to be quick, Liam, because I'm worried you're going to shut me down. I want to mention something else that's very important. Liam Lawson, a good showing in practice. He didn't get the upgrade. Arvin got the upgrade for the cooling of the car. But look, he's, you know, sort of 10th fastest in free practice too. There's penalties coming for a couple of drivers ahead, so he's looking good to qualify inside the top 10. What a week from it. He was a good wood. He got to drive the Bruce McLaren Chris Amon car from 1966, the black and silver. a car with the silver fern on it that won Le Mans, and it was amazing. He finished his run and he didn't want to get out of it. And Liam's on a tear at the moment, and I think this will be quite good. He had a good showing at Spa last year, so I think that's another one worth watching. You've got Spa, one of the greatest tracks in motorsport, and a World Cup final. And I don't know if you want to talk about F1, Mark, but I'm just going to press on because the other big matches coming up are the All-Ireland hurling final and next week the football final. Now, I want to mention something. Mayo have made the final. Back in 1951, the last All-Ireland they won, they were driving back, they went through a town. They didn't show enough respect to a funeral that was going on, and the priest put a curse on them and said, "You'll never win an All-Ireland final again while any of you are alive." And they have not won an All-Ireland final since. They've made finals, 11 finals, and they haven't won. There's been replays of finals, they haven't won. The last player died in 2003. This is the first final they've made since then. They're up against Kerry. They're not the favourites. But I think this is one of the coolest stories in sport. Look it up, everybody. Just amazing. So exciting.
Yep, I love
the
way
in the hurling. But this Kerry Mayo, I'm so excited by that. Sam's coming home, they're saying, in Mayo.
Oh, that'll be brilliant. And when you look about it, that curse, that is one of the curses of the century.
Oh, look it up. It's amazing.
Oh. Yeah.
They say there's no curse, but how can you make the finals 11 times and lose? And now the player's died, they've made the final. He died in 2003. This could be it.
Absolutely. This is.
Rest his soul.
Yeah. I was just going to say, Mark, Commonwealth Games are starting next week, and you wouldn't know there's a Commonwealth Games starting.
Oh, look, it'll pick up some interest. It's not what it once was. It's just not, you know, each of these, you know, I said up until 1982, I think, was probably, you know, when, you know, Commonwealth Games still probably sat just below the Olympics in terms of prestige. The problem now is that every individual sport has their own world championships, and therefore you tend to get a lot of athletes who might bypass the Commonwealth Games in terms of their periodisation, in terms of building up as well. Obviously, no country really wanted to host them. Glasgow sort of stepped back in at the last minute and said, "You will do it." They've reduced the number of sports. I don't think there's a games villages there, and there's certainly not an opening ceremony of any major sort of spend. Look, it'll get momentum once it does get going. There's still interest for me in some swimming and some of the traditional sort of maybe track events, but
yeah,
I mean, you know, we've seen in recent times a lot of medals being handed out with some pretty average performances that probably wouldn't have got you too far at the Olympic Games level, but look, it's still important to us. Hopefully it can revitalise itself. It will get momentum once it gets going, but yeah, it's I think it's always also been just a little bit in the shadow, hasn't it, of sort of the All Blacks and the FIFA Football World Cup. You know, it's obviously big from a netball point of view as well, but yeah, look, I'm not dishing it. I just don't think it's quite as prestigious as it once was.
No, I don't think it is, and I think the other thing too is, like, Hamish Kerr looks like he will be bypassing the Commonwealth Games because he hasn't got really that competition. But I will say one thing, the swimming and the cycling, that'll interest me,
yeah.
And especially in the cycling. And just with you, Sean, and obviously when we look at things, which game are you going to tonight?
I'm going to the Warriors. I actually got offered a ticket to Ireland. It was too expensive to take the family. It was ridiculous. They've lost sense of what their value is. But I've got season tickets to the Warriors, and it's conspired. I haven't been to a game yet this year. And I said to my daughters, look, do you really want to go? Hell yes. So it's the Wars.
Yep, and I'll tell you what, I just little silly, you know, there's also some of the trains are down today already, so it's a great start to the sporting weekend. Well, guys, I'm just going to say this, and I want to thank both of you for all the support you've given me, whether it the moral support, the humorous support, and the fun we have had doing the show, and you two have really made a bloody good panel, and I'm...
6 years. God, Mark, well, I remember you said to me, could you just come and do the first couple of shows with me? That's all I need.
Yeah.
I was sold that same con as well, mate. And here I am, mate. Hair's fallen out, I've aged. Anxiety levels are up, mate. But somehow I'm still here, mate. I'm actually going to watch the All Black game. I'm up at 11,000 feet at a lake called Lake Qinghai. It's the largest lake in China. It's 4,300 square kilometres And the moment the final stage of the spike race that I'm commentating finishes, I'm straight into the television truck with the car. I'm hotspotting off my phone and I'm straight into the All Blacks and then switching back between that and the Warriors. So there you go. That's how my day plays out.
Yeah, I will have my phone at the Warriors. Don't worry.
Anyway, I would just like to say, as we hear on several other radio shows, you're nothing but great New Zealanders. Great New Zealanders, boys.
Patriot, mate. Yep, patriot. Can you tell my wife that?
Well, no.
Shopping,
goodbye. Goodbye. Hey, thanks a lot.
To tell her that, mate. Come on, mate.
See you later. Right. Cheers.
See you, boys.
Bye. Okay, so thanks, everyone. Well, 6 years ago, started off in a small little villa on Carrington Road at the Unitech building, and we've grown into what has been a bit of a cult following. I want to thank everyone that has been involved and all the people that have supported this show. And, you know, people might say, hey, it has sometimes it's been good, sometimes it hasn't been good, but I believe what we've built here from a community sports show into a show where we've got many people listening and it's well respected. So thank you all. Thanks to all the people at the station. Thanks to all the sponsors, and thanks to you guys that listen in. So goodbye and have a great weekend.